Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report. In a worldwide struggle underway between Moscow and Beijing and NATO, Latin America is part of the story. Therefore, the success or not success of Latin America will very much influence the presentation by adversaries such as Russia and such as China in these coming years. I welcome Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. And we begin with a country close at hand, not a South American country, in fact, integrated into the North American system, Mexico, our partner for more than a century in development. And then the puzzle about the administration of the present president, AMLO, López Obrador, and also the inheritance of a Mexican system that seems to be fragmented into doing very well along the border with the U.S. and not so everywhere else. Professor, a very good evening to you. The article in The Economist points me to ask, is there something inherited for AMLO that makes the measure that Mexico is not a good place to do business, the taxes, the regulation, the whole organization is set up to be difficult for growing your business? Good evening to you.
Evening to you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you on the show. With respect to AMLO, there are good news and bad news stories for Mexico. Certainly, the transformation of Mexico can be traced back to 1994 when it integrated itself into the broader North American economy through NAFTA, now USMCA. And what you saw, especially under governments with Felipe Calderón and Enrique Peña Nieto, was an attempt to be more business friendly. The opening up, for example, of the oil sector in 2016 and other things. Although Mexico certainly has had significant problems, not only with violence, but also with inefficiencies in public services and other affairs. AMLO, in many ways, reimposed an old style, call it Chicago party boss style governance. He previously, again, was the leftist mayor of Mexico City. And so what he brought back into this was a number of different kind of anti-market orientations. He wanted to lead with the money-losing and highly corrupt state oil company, Pemex, in the petroleum sector. He wanted to lead with the Mexican Federal Electricity Organization instead of private electricity generation in a place where electricity generation is already high. He wanted to lead with his own public infrastructure projects, canceling some of the most significant ones that were already previously underway. And so certainly from a U.S. business standpoint, but also from a Mexican standpoint, there's the sense that if there were problems before in not being a business friendly environment, AMLO has certainly made it worse. And that has particularly been felt with the pain of COVID-19, among other things. Mexico still has a very well functioning economy, a lot to offer, and certainly being plugged into the supply chains of the United States through USMCA has been a powerful driver, especially for states in the north. But, frankly, AMLO and Moreno and his style of governance has not been helping things.
Yes, the attention is both to the red tape and the taxes and security. Now, security along the American border is vital because of the immigration story and also because of the narco-terrorist gangs or states that sell into the United States by many means. Is that a priority for AMLO? Is AMLO interested in providing security for his small businessmen who, according to this, routinely pay protection money as if it was a tax burden?
Well, AMLO, in the big picture, has certainly recognized the importance of the United States as one of Mexico's generators of growth, and his work to make sure that the Mexican economy continued to remain integrated with the U.S. economy as a source for its exports as well as supply chains. However, some of AMLO's priorities with respect to business has been on building up state-led firms, and it also has been in developing the South, as we saw with Tren Maya. In addition, of course, AMLO, as you alluded to, John, has not done much to try to clean up some of the micro anti-business environment that you see. Some of the problems with, again, things like extortion of small businesses, high levels of taxes, the difficulties of actually setting up a business, the just oppressive role, for example, that Mexico's unions have, and a number of other. It's very difficult to prosper with respect to business in Mexico. And that's one of the reasons why it's been so difficult for Mexico to move beyond the very large informal sector that it has to generating more formal sector jobs, with the exception of those factories in the north, which are oriented towards the United States.
It can look from a great distance by an amateur such as myself that Mexico was showing promise through the latter part of the 20th century. And then China was welcomed into the World Trade Organization in 2001. Today, China is an adversary, a global threat, and the crisis in Europe suggests that this is an ongoing problem. So was that a mistake, turning from Mexico to China, and can we reverse course? Is it possible? Could it become a national security priority for an administration?
Well, there's certainly a very important debate right now, especially after COVID-19 and with the rise of China with respect to nearshoring. And as you point out, John, it was a dramatic impact on Mexico that was one of the primary suppliers of low-cost labor and manufacturing to us, that when China came in, it not only began to displace Mexico from third markets such as the United States, but also Chinese products began to undercut Mexican manufacturers, which were then not as cost competitive. What we've seen now is there's been a bit of a return to that integration attempt to do more things from Mexico. And to some degree, what we've seen is a broader integration of supply chains in which, for example, in sectors like textiles, Mexican companies will actually source Chinese yarn and then will sell the final product assembled in Mexico under USMCA regulations to the United States. And so, there are different ways to respond to the relationship between Mexico and China. I tend to believe that we'll not return to a complete nearshoring orientation, whether Mexico or whether Central American countries who also have nearshoring access benefits through CAFTA, simply because there are certain price advantages that the Chinese have in certain established production chains. But one of the other things that we've certainly seen with respect to the logistics difficulties, the problems with the dramatic increase in the price of shipping containers, which have gone from $2,000 for a shipping container to, in some cases, up to $20,000 a shipping container with delays. So it's really kind of exposed the reliance of China, and I think that has certainly been to Mexico's benefit. But again, Mexico does have reasonably good transportation infrastructure, aside from the problem of violence. But part of the difficulty, again, is for Mexico to take advantage of some of those things. In addition to the regulatory structure, you need to have, for example, affordable electricity costs, which, again, goes to AMLO's very anti-business policy there. You need to have security. You need to have other things that make that a reliable thing to do. And I think we're still working on that with Mexico right now.
President Andres Manuel López Obrador canceled an airport that was half built when he first came into office. That's what I remembered until I read this most recent article, that he's building an airport called Felipe Angeles, where only four airlines have indicated they will fly from Felipe Angeles to whenever. So, López Obrador, what do we make of his understanding of developing Mexico? Because he builds large projects that are unneeded, according to this reporting, cancels projects that are well along. He reminds me sometimes like Nelson Rockefeller, who built Albany, who built that great mall in Albany, all wonderful as a legacy project. But now who remembers except for me when I look him up?
Well, Amlo certainly wanted to put his particular stamp on things, the big projects that he wanted to be his signature projects. And he took a lot of criticism for the airport project. As you alluded to, Mexico historically had a airport that was really right in the middle of Mexico City. It was very complicated to access. It was at the limits of its capacity. And so for years, there had been an ongoing project to build a new airport to the north of Mexico City. It was well underway. It was going to be, depending on the estimates, $9 to $13 billion in costs to build this shiny new, dramatically expanded airport. AMLO came in and decided that there were some geological issues, there were some issues with corruption, there were some issues of overpricing, but just decided to cancel the whole thing and then set up a new airport, which was essentially much smaller, much farther out, basically leveraging a military base about 27 miles from Mexico City. And so, with a lot of delays, finally, that airport, Felipe Angeles, that you alluded to, just opened. But even so, there's a lot of problems because that airport is really too small. And so they're going to simultaneously do Felipe Angeles and others, which is going to wreak havoc on the control of airspace in Mexico City. And really, this is just an exemplar of some of the other areas where the decisions that AMLO has made with respect to infrastructure projects are questionable. One of the other issues is the Tabasco oil refinery, which is already well over cost, and some question of whether it's actually needed with declining oil production right now. Or, for example, Mexico's Maya tourist train, which is meant to develop the south of the country. It's a project that, like the Tabasco refinery, brings in Chinese money and Chinese construction companies. But there's a question of whether that was, in environmental terms and in other terms, that the wisest decision of how you develop the south of Mexico by building a tourist train that doesn't even attend to some of the major cities there.
Pemex, the Tabasco oil refinery. However, my memory from previous administrations, perhaps, is that Pemex is a crown jewel that the government has in its hand and won't release, and that it makes it very difficult for outside investors to compete with Pemex. There was even some restriction on how deep the Pemex could explore in the Gulf of Mexico. I remember this from years ago. Forgive me, Professor, for being inexact. But does the AMLO government regard Pemex as a personal possession of the administration?
AMLO certainly has a very statist idea that goes back to, again, the 1930s, the idea of the oil is ours. If you go back to Cuauhtemoc Cárdenas the Peña Nieto administration before AMLO had begun to get away from that, recognizing that Mexico, needed foreign oil expertise. It needed foreign oil money. And so back in 2016, you had a series of openings that really had made substantial progress with respect to oil. AMLO had reversed a lot of that. There's been no new oil sector investment. He's tried to channel everything through Pemex, even though Pemex is literally hemorrhaging cash. You have the broad theft of oil and corruption, what they call the huachicoleros, an entire industry basically of stealing Pemex's oil, as well as the inefficiencies, the difficulties of bringing production up. And so in some ways, many people feel that not only is AMLO not getting the type of investment that Mexico needs to keep its oil production up, but it's throwing good money after bad, putting basically helping to subsidize a corrupt, losing entity. And that does not serve what has traditionally been one of the cash cows for generating revenues for the Mexican state. And this kind of oversized and overcost refinery there in Tabasco, the Dos Bocas refinery, is really just emblematic of that, perhaps that mistaken orientation on how you develop Mexico's oil with a state firm, as opposed to at least balancing, welcoming private sector investment and private technology as a complement to your state-run oil sector.
Is there a general opinion of AMLO more than halfway through his term? Is he regarded old-fashioned? He thinks 20th century big projects and big men, or he's a leftist and he's integrated into the progressive wave? Is there a quick opinion of him, Professor?
Again, different people think differently of AMLO, angel or devil. To me, he's a traditional Chicago style party boss. My sense is he's a decent man who oftentimes makes some very poor decisions. And if you look at the amount of time that he spends on his television shows and radio program, he very much loves to communicate with the people, but maybe is not what Mexico needs for the 21st century.
Professor Evan Ellis, Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. That's the think tank for the DOD. We're going to turn to a surprising story from Colombia, the great ally of the United States undergoing a presidential and legislative election, has hit a bump. The New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.